It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 56 degrees with a few clouds hanging around. Out at the airport, they have 51% humidity, west winds to 6 miles per hour, and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service says look for partly sunny skies for the rest of the day with a high near 55, northwest winds to 10, gusting to 20. Mostly cloudy overnight with a low of 42, northwest winds to 15. And for tomorrow, partly sunny skies with a high near 54, 40% chance of showers after 10 a.m. Northwest winds to 15 tomorrow. They're calling for partly sunny skies on Saturday. A little rain on Sunday. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak has a 40-year-old salmon hatchery. Preliminary forecast for Bristol Bay see fewer sockeye returning next year. And a battery recycling initiative here in rural Alaska.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Biden leaves soon for Southeast Asia, where he and other world leaders will gather for the highly anticipated G20 summit. NPR's Windsor Johnson reports on Biden's visit to India and later to Vietnam.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan says the administration is hoping the summit will show that the world's major economies can work together, even in challenging times.
As the president heads to the G20, he's committed to working with emerging market partners to deliver big things together. That's what we believe the world will see in New Delhi this weekend. The United States' commitment to the G20 hasn't wavered.
Sullivan says climate change, the war in Ukraine, and countering increasing threats from China will be top of mind for the president. From New Delhi, Biden will travel to Hanoi, where he'll focus on increasing economic cooperation. Windsor Johnston, NPR News.
Meanwhile, Vice President Kamala Harris is returning home from the ASEAN summit, and U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken spent the day meeting with Ukrainian officials and visiting communities near Kyiv. He visited a school as Ukrainian children are heading back to class for fall. Here's NPR's Brian Mann.
After touring the school, Secretary Blinken spoke about the resilience of the Ukrainian people and their efforts to keep the economy and cultural life going despite months of Russian attacks. Blinken reacted to the latest large-scale strike on a marketplace in eastern Ukraine.
Just yesterday, we saw the bombing of a market. 17 people or more killed, many others injured. A market. For what?
At least one child died in that attack near Donetsk. Over the last 24 hours, Russia also bombed civilian areas in the city of Kherson, where another person died. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky has begun a new round of diplomacy, asking other nations for aid, strengthening his country's air defenses. Brian Mann, NPR News, Kyiv.
Turkish authorities have released a video message from an American cave researcher who is trapped thousands of feet below the surface in a cave and in need of medical attention. Mark Dickey is suffering from gastrointestinal bleeding.
I look forward to working with everyone to safely get myself out with their assistance. As you can see, I'm up, I'm alert, I'm talking, but I'm not healed on the inside yet, so I need a lot of help to get out of here.
According to the video message recorded yesterday, Dickey says the fast delivery of medical supplies saved his life. Dickey also credits the caving community for rushing to his aid. As many as 170 rescuers from across Europe are working to save the American's life. Hurricane Lee's rapidly intensifying over the warm waters of the Atlantic. The National Hurricane Center says the storms reach a Category 2 status, top sustained winds of 105 miles per hour. It's expected to become a Cat 5 within the next 36 hours. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Some areas in Alaska have entirely wild salmon runs, but there are also more than two dozen hatcheries around the state. Two of those facilities are based in Kodiak, including one near the mouth of Pillar Creek, just outside of town. KMXT's Brian Benoit toured the facility and has this story.
The Pillar Creek hatchery constantly has water running as young fish swim through runways, which are long tanks that simulate a small creek. It all starts with egg takes. Hatchery staff and volunteers take four-wheelers or fly out to remote lakes to catch fish that are close to spawning. Eggs are then brought to the hatchery's indoor facilities. Tina Fairbanks is the executive director of the Kodiak Regional Aquaculture Association, which operates the hatchery. The summer marks 40 years for the organization. Fairbanks says hatchery eggs have a much higher survival rate than wild spawners.
At the hatchery level, if we see 20% mortality, we're upset. You know, at Pillar Creek Hatchery, a lot of times they'll have 90% survival from the time that they're taken as eggs until the time that they are ponded as fry and start rearing here at the hatchery.
She says at best, only about a fifth of wild eggs make it to that stage. James Turman, who also goes by Hawk, is the Pillar Creek hatchery manager. He says while it's normal for anadromous fish returns to vary, the facility's main goal is to support fishers when runs are low.
It's all about bringing that bottom end of the boom bust up. Is when it's booming, no one cares about what we do. There's fish everywhere.
Yeah.
It's kind of disregarded. But when there's not enough fish, like, for example, the Buskin was closed down for reds.
That means in a big run year, hatcheries produce only a small percentage of returns. But hatchery fish could make up of half of a fishery in the single year. The Pillar Creek facility currently has sockeye, coho, chinook, and even rainbow trout. And there's protocols to maximize their survival rate. For example, staff constantly disinfect before interacting with fish.
So if something does happen, then it's isolated to one small portion. And it's very easy, because of our protocols, to figure out where the contamination came from. So we have foot baths all over the place. All the coolers you see on the ground, those are full of medical-grade disinfectant.
For most folks, these fish are nearly indistinguishable from fully wild ones. Salmon are marked by their otoliths. That's a small bone in their heads that shows their growth over a lifetime. Every hatchery gets assigned their own marks by a lab in Juneau. Most facilities mark otoliths by heating or cooling the water that runs over eggs, but Turman says Kodiak staff mark their fish a little differently.
We actually figured out how to do it without any additional utility. So here we do what's called dry marking. It's a little scary the first time you do it. You actually drain the water off of your eggs.
Eggs can be dry for up to 24 hours, and it leaves dark lines on the grown fish's otolith. Once grown, fish are released in various creeks and lakes around the archipelago and mingle with their feral counterparts before swimming to the ocean. Fairbanks, with the Regional Aquaculture Association, says while numbers won't be finalized until winter, they've already doubled their forecasted return for this year. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
Bristol Bay could see fewer sockeye return next year. That's according to the preliminary preseason forecast from the Fisheries Research Institute in Aleutianegik. The forecast reports on Bristol Bay as a whole, and researchers say it gives participants in the fishery perspective 2 months before the formal forecast is announced. KDLG's Christina McDermott has more.
This is the first year the Fisheries Research Institute has released a preliminary preseason forecast. Its scientists are predicting a run of just under 39 million sockeye. That's about 30% fewer fish than the 10-year average. Curry Cunningham is a fisheries professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks and a member of the research team. He says the preliminary forecast, which is for Bristol Bay generally, gives fishers perspective for next year a little earlier than usual.
Now, this year, we wanted to put out a product a bit earlier, basically on a timeline when the last in-season sort of daily release from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game was available, kind of end of July, beginning of August.
This preliminary forecast is based on in-season estimates of total harvest and escapement numbers and in-season age information from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Cunningham says that because the numbers aren't finalized and the Bay River run reconstruction process not yet undertaken, the preliminary forecast is less accurate than the formal preseason forecast released each year in November.
So the total sockeye salmon run to Bristol Bay, our standard preseason forecast, our formal preseason forecast that comes out in November, has an error rate of about 15%. This has a higher error rate of about 18% at the Bristol Bay scale.
Cunningham says both forecasts make predictions based on returning sockeye's ocean age or how long the fish have spent at sea. This year, he says, about 80% of returning fish were Ocean 3 sockeye. Cunningham says that's usually as old as fish get before coming back.
So a key part of the lower forecast this year, one, these systems change in productivity over time, number one. And number two, we were seeing this sort of strong cohort that was represented as two ocean fish in 2022 and three ocean fish in 2023. They've now passed through the system, and it seems like we're going to see a slightly lower run next year.
Next year, Cunningham says they're expecting mostly Ocean 2 fish to return, which means fishers might see smaller sockeye. November's formal preseason forecast, which is modeled with finalized data, will include details on how many fish to expect in each district and run times. In Dillingham, I'm Christina McDermott.
A new initiative that retrieves e-waste from communities across rural Alaska says they collected and recycled over 145,000 pounds of lead-acid batteries from 45 communities last year. Backhaul Alaska came out of an idea from Senator Lisa Murkowski and now receives federal grant money to address the challenge of getting hazardous waste out of remote Alaska communities. Riley Kaczynski works for Zender Environmental, a nonprofit that manages the backhaul program. He says waste management is uniquely challenging in much of the state.
Alaska, many of our small communities are roadless. They might only have access to barge one or two times a year. And there's just the lack of infrastructure to deal with waste in the same manner that folks in the lower 48 do.
Kaczynski says Alaska has a special exemption to use Class 3 landfills, which are unlined and involve minimal mitigation, leaving the surrounding environment more susceptible. As the batteries break down, the toxic lead can seep into drinking water, or if they are burned, which Kaczynski says is still common, the chemicals are released into the air.
So it just makes it more important to kind of keep those potentially harmful things from going into the landfill in the first place.
The program trains local residents to safely consolidate hazardous batteries and other e-waste, then coordinates discounted backhaul shipments on cargo ships or planes. Kaczynski says the waste is then delivered to certified recycling facilities in the lower 48. John Kite directs communications for the Responsible Battery Coalition, a national organization supporting Backhaul Alaska. He says lead-acid batteries are 99% recyclable, and the lead can be reused indefinitely.
If you went out today to buy a brand new battery, regardless of where you buy it, it's entirely possible that the lead in that battery could be 20, 30, 40, 50 years old. Lead is 100% recyclable.
2022 was the first official year of the initiative, and Kaczynski says it's looking like they may collect even more e-waste this year. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland has canceled all oil and gas leases in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. She told reporters on Wednesday it safeguards the land for future generations.
With today's action, no one will have rights to drill for oil in one of the most sensitive landscapes on Earth. Climate change is the crisis of our lifetime, and we cannot ignore the disproportionate impacts being felt in the Arctic. We must do everything within our control to meet the highest standards of care to protect this fragile ecosystem.
No company was close to drilling in the refuge. Two companies that bought leases during the Trump administration later gave them up. The only remaining leaseholder is the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. Its executive director says the state agency will challenge the legality of Haaland's decision in court. A 2017 law required the Interior Department to hold two lease sales in the refuge. Interior officials say they still intend to hold the second lease sale by the end of next year. Alaska Oil and Gas Association President Kara Moriarty says canceling the leases discourages future bids for drilling rights in the refuge and nationwide.
It does not send a signal of stability or consistency or that this administration believes in the future of oil and gas development in our country. I mean, if you're an investor in any federal area in America, you'd have to wonder, what the heck?
Holland also announced a proposed rule for federal land to the west in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. The rule would fortify conservation measures on land previously set aside for protection. The rule does not directly impinge on Willow, a massive project in the NPRA that ConocoPhillips has already begun work on. From Jennifer Hudson to Carrie Underwood, the television show American Idol is known for launching the careers of successful performers. Four musicians were in Nome this week in hopes of being selected to audition live in front of celebrity judges in L.A. KNOM's Ava White met with the Idol contestants to talk about their audition experience.
KNOM announced their collaboration with American Idol early last month. KNOM staff traveled to eight Bering Strait villages to record submissions for Western Alaskans. According to Melissa Elfar, the show's senior producer, this was the first time the show had people flying out to record videos of auditions. Elfar and the American Idol production team reviewed dozens of submitted auditions and selected four performers to advance to live auditions in Nome. Contestants auditioned one-on-one with the American Idol production team in Los Angeles, performing two different songs. Kipnuk resident Martin Paul played a traditional Yupik drum during his online audition. He's recently taught Yupik dancing and drumming at a camp in the YK Delta community of Aniak. Paul said he hopes this opportunity leads to more teaching requests.
It was such a great feeling to, at the end of that entire camp, these kids that I taught were literally singing by themselves, and they were like confident enough to do that, and something about that really like touched me, and I'm hoping that I will get more opportunities to teach Yurok or even perform.
Chad Callahan was the only contestant who performed without an instrument. The Nome resident says he's loved music since taking Mr. Horner's choir class in the 7th grade.
I've always loved singing, but I've never really pursued it for anything. This is the first time that I'm going, you know, hard and trying to sing for something other than just in the shower.
Like Callahan, McKeon Ivanoff's musical journey began young. He began playing the guitar when he was 11 in his home community of Unalakleet.
I just wanted to be like the big kids that were playing guitar, so I tried to learn from them, and then I just thought it was really cool, and it's just a fun thing to do. It's a good hobby, just to pass the time, express feelings.
Selma Casagranda recently became comfortable performing her own music and performs it frequently in her hometown of Seward at the farmers market. She began writing her own lyrics at the age of 12 and says writing allows her to connect with music on a deeper level.
I used to hate performing, but now that I have my own work, it feels a lot more meaningful, and I'm able to connect with performing in a different way now.
Both Ivanoff and Casagranda auditioned with guitars. The Nome auditions are the last step before live auditions in Los Angeles. Contestants will be notified of their audition status by the end of the week, according to Elfar. For KNOM, I'm Ava White.
The knowledge, work, and art of indigenous healers and medicine people in Alaska is being featured at the Anchorage Museum. Good Medicine is a multidisciplinary exhibit and includes paintings, illustrations, a medicine wheel, a women's house, and a men's house. Those houses are traditionally used for healing, teaching, and meetings. Mita DeWitt is a Lingit healer and curator of the exhibit. DeWitt says the show is both about healing and is healing in itself. She says it holds space for traditional healers to be seen and to speak. That's in contrast to colonization's attempts at erasure of Alaska Native culture and traditional healing practices. She says healers were targeted during colonization because of the ways they protected people.
You have to remove the medicine people, the spiritual leaders, and the traditional healers. And so many folks were sent to insane asylums or penitentiaries, or they were just taken out into the woods and went missing, never came back, or out into the ocean.
She says for decades, Alaskan Native people were forbidden from practicing traditional healing. So now people are choosing ways to adapt traditional healing to contemporary life.
We have to first fully articulate who we were pre-contact and understand that, to then be able to understand how to adapt it so that we are 21st century indigenous people on our own terms.
Ultimately, DeWitt says that acknowledging the trauma and pain of colonization is part of the cultural healing process, and it will create a better future.
Let's not whitewash history. Let's just bring it out, talk about it, and work as a community together to seek healing and repair of those relationships and historic events. So that way our future generations don't have to carry on that burden any longer.
The exhibit Good Medicine will be up through spring of next year. Parts of the exhibit are fixed, and there's a rotating component that will feature new healers and artists every month or two. In March of 2024, there will be a fire ceremony. People can write down their intentions for something they either want to let go or to bring into their life. Those papers will be burned in the ceremony. Kenai police arrested two men this weekend for kidnapping and assault. KDLL's Riley Board has the story.
According to an affidavit, a woman called Kenai police Saturday and reported she had been kidnapped and assaulted by two men. She said she went to Douglas Massey's home on the Kenai Spur Highway because he owed her money for drugs. A different man, John Martin, was in the home when she arrived, and she says the two men trapped and repeatedly assaulted her. She described being assaulted with a variety of items and weapons, being hit in the face and head several times, and being threatened with rape. The woman says she escaped to a neighbor's house to call for help after the men fell asleep. Police say they investigated the scene and found many of the weapons the woman described, as well as blood splatters and bloody clothes. In an interview with police, Massey and Martin both denied taking part in the kidnapping and assault. Police described the woman's injuries in the affidavit, including bruising across her body. Martin is facing five charges: kidnapping, second-degree assault, third-degree assault, second-degree sexual assault, and a misdemeanor drug charge. Massey is facing three, including kidnapping, second-degree assault, and third-degree assault. Martin and Massey were both arraigned on Labor Day. They both have preliminary hearings scheduled for September 14th. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
Initial jobless claims fall to a seven-month low. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. New applications for unemployment benefits declined to 216,000 last week, the lowest level since February, according to the Labor Department. Continuing claims fell to their lowest level since January, under 1.7 million. Starting in November, Google will require prominent disclosure of political advertising generated with artificial intelligence tools. Such ads have already appeared in the current election cycle. A parade of Federal Reserve officials are scheduled to make public remarks today. In 2 days, they enter a quiet period before the central bank's next policy meeting. Speculation is growing that they will leave interest rates at their current level. I'm Nova Safa with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate leasing and management. JLL.com.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the seventh day of September, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 7:22. It will set again at 8:50, giving us 13 hours and 28 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 54 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high for this date was 69 degrees set in 2018, and our record low is 38 set in 1988, 1992, and then again in 2004. Currently 56 degrees with a few clouds out there, west winds to 6 miles per hour, 10 miles of visibility out at the airport, partly sunny skies for today and tomorrow and Saturday. For today, look for northwest winds to 10, gusting to 20, mostly cloudy overnight with a low of 42, northwest winds to 15, and just a 40% chance of showers in the midst of the partly sunny skies after 11 a.m. tomorrow. Let's check in with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 42, issued 9 a.m. September 5th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Wednesday, September 6th, till 6 p.m. Friday, September 8th, in the inner Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District. Closed waters adjustments. Closed waters will be reduced from noon Wednesday, September 6th, to 6 p.m. Friday, September 8th, in the following area. At Karluk Lagoon's exit channel terminus at the ocean shoreline. As previously announced, the following areas are open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice. The outer Aikulik, outer Karluk, Sturgeon, and Halibut Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Northeast Kodiak District, the Eastside Kodiak District, Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Humpy Deadman, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District, northwest of Fog Neck, Raspberry Strait, Duck Bay, Iziut Bay, Outer Gatoy Bay, southwest of Fog Neck, and northeast of Fog Neck sections of the Fog Neck District and the Mainland District. Closed waters are expanded until further notice in that portion of the southwest of Fog Neck section of the Fog Neck District within 1/2 nautical mile of the beach near the terminus of Molina Creek. Until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only that portion of northwest Kodiak and southwest Kodiak districts south of the latitude of Cape Kuliuk, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear. It must be returned to the water unharmed. Cost recovery fisheries began the Katoya Bay Special Harvest Area on September 2nd. Cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-6559. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area stat charts and detailed in the commercial salmon fishing regs. Stat charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. Recent salmon fishery announcement information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559.
The tide is still going out. Our next low tide will be at 1:41 this afternoon here on the east side and be 3.9 feet, followed by a high tide at 8:16 p.m. of 7.8 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 2:19 this afternoon and be a 6-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 8:38 p.m. of 11.5 feet. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. West winds to 20 knots today, northwest winds to 20 knots tonight, 4-foot seas today, coming down to 3 feet tonight, and northwest 15 tomorrow with 4-foot seas. They are calling for southeast 25 on Saturday with 8-foot seas. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory today, northwest winds to 25 knots and seas to 5 feet today. For tonight, northwest 20 and 4-foot seas, and for tomorrow in the Shelikof, north 20 seas to 3 feet. For Saturday in the Shelikof, look for east winds to 20 knots, seas to 5 feet. For you inside water mariners, in Chiniak Bay, expect west winds to 15 knots, becoming northwest 10 this afternoon with seas to 2 feet. For tonight, northwest 15 and 2-foot seas. And for tomorrow in Chiniak Bay, northwest 15, seas to 2 feet. Up in Marmot Bay, west 15 today with 3-foot seas. Northwest 15 tonight with 2-foot seas. And northwest 15 tomorrow with seas to 2 feet tomorrow in Marmot Bay. Kodiak's Fairwind players are back for another round of Boo. It's Boo 2. Their Halloween spectacular debuted last year to such acclaim that they decided to do it again with all new silly, scary short skits and a short play. There are parts for just about every age group and any level of experience. If you've ever wanted to try your hand at acting, this is your chance to show your stuff. It'll be fast, fun, and you'll have a howlingly good time. Auditions are tonight at 6 to 9 p.m. and Sunday from noon to 2 p.m. in the drama pod of the Gerald C. Wilson. Performances will be on the 27th and 28th of October. No need to bring anything and nothing to prepare. Just show up on Thursday, tonight, or Sunday, and they'll take it from there. And they need kids from 8 to 108. Mostly teens and adults, though. Call Mike or Pam at KMXT at 486-3181 for more information. It's going to be bootiful. But again, that's tonight from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Drama Pod, and Sunday from noon to 2 p.m. Things happening at the Kodiak Public Library include the end of summer reading celebration. A beach party has been rescheduled for September 16th at the library from 1 to 3 p.m. with food, games, and the music of Ellamy Tiller. All patrons are welcome to attend. Rain or shine, the event will be held inside if the weather is bad. Again, that's Saturday, September 16th. Join September's Reading Challenge, which is Fall into Reading. With fewer requirements, this one-month-long challenge offers incentives and awards for time well spent. Register on Beanstack, kodiak.beanstack.org. September is National Library Card Sign-Up Month. If you need a library card, just bring your picture ID and documentation that you live in Kodiak, and you will have access to the resources available at your public library, which are considerable. Also, Wednesdays at 3:30 p.m. is Lego Club. Thursdays at 10:30 a.m. is preschool story time. And Friday's Canna Elder Story Time is happening tomorrow at 10:30 a.m. Library hours are Mondays, Fridays, and Saturdays, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., and Tuesdays and Thursdays, 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Dive into the history of rock and roll at Kodiak College during the fall semester. Beginning September 11th, that's coming right up. This 10-week immersive journey will take students on a melodic ride through the evolution of rock and roll, from revelatory electric blues through the rebellious fervor of punk and the experimental sounds of modern indie rock. Explore their significance against a background of cultural, social, and political revolution. Join Dr. Mark Schreider for this short course that promises to be an exciting blend of lectures, discussions, and immersive listening as you traverse the genre's history in a way that's both educational and electrifying. If that sounds like fun or interesting, registration is open right now for Humanities 212, History of Rock and Roll, at your Kodiak College. Tonight, the Kodiak Borough Assembly will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers. That's happening at 6:30 p.m.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.